Here is a program transcribed earlier from Mutual.
Now it's time for the friendly voice of Frazier Hunt, brought to you each weekday, Monday through Friday, over the Mutual Broadcasting System. Frazier Hunt, world traveler and world reporter, brings you the latest news, his own expert comment on the puzzling issues of the day, and those touching human interest stories for which he is famous. And now, Frazier Hunt.
Hi, everybody. Well, today's the first anniversary of the official VE Day, and it finds Europe hungry and battered, without war, it's true, but also without peace, any true peace. Meanwhile, the struggle against starvation continues, and the capitals that wildly celebrated VE Day a year ago are little given to celebration today. The nationwide coal strike struck heavy new blows at the country's faltering industrial machine, and the outlook for settlement of the 39-day-old strike remained gloomy. The number idle because of the strike zoomed past the 800,000 mark as the nation's industries, railroads, and utilities literally strangled for lack of fuel. More cities and states prepared to enforce brownouts to conserve power. The administration, however, has undertaken no move except mediation to force a settlement. If any is planned, it is not revealed. The Ford Motor Company will suspend virtually all production tonight. The shutdown, which will affect 110,000 workers in Ford plants across the nation, will cost a car-hungry public the production of approximately 3,000 Ford automobiles and trucks a day. Chrysler Corporation said its assembly lines and body plant operations may be suspended early next week because of the coal emergency. And General Motors, announcing shutdown of its LaGrange, Illinois unit, said other work may be affected within a very short time. That's the gloomy picture. And not only that, but it was predicted today that the United States industry will require several months to achieve smooth production even after the current six-weeks-old soft coal strike is settled. And John L. Lewis and his United Mine Workers refused to budge an inch from their original contract demands, forcing even more stringent government controls over the nation's fast-dwindling soft coal supplies. The strike against the TW Airlines was temporarily stayed today, pending an emergency meeting here of the Air Pilots Master Executive Council. No doubt, no date has been set for the meeting. The Big Four Council of Foreign Ministers meeting in Paris returned all of Transylvania to Romania. The confreres, however, then became hopelessly deadlocked on all aspects of the Danube River control. Here in New York, the United Nations Security Council tackles the Russian-Iranian issue again this afternoon with prospects of a heated session and a new Soviet boycott. The members were uncertain whether Soviet delegate Andrei Gromyko would attend, and if he did, whether he would leave the chamber as he has threatened to do if Iran is mentioned. There is still some question about the Soviets' complete withdrawal from Iran. And last night, Andrei Gromyko warned of certain failure for any attempt by one or two nations to impose a guardianship over the world. Gromyko spoke before the American-Russian Institute dinner to honor the memory of the late Franklin D. Roosevelt. Generalissimo Joseph Stalin, in a message to the Institute, lauded the late president. The United States holds a book of secret documents about alleged Soviet interference in Iran's internal affairs, but it will not offer them in evidence to the United Security Council, certainly not at this time. The United States put an end today to a lot of speculation about Operations Crossroads by inviting 11 nations to send official representatives and news correspondents to the coming atomic bomb test in the Pacific. Well, it's a grand idea to let all the world see firsthand what we're in for if we don't find real peace and find it soon. In Washington, the Senate agreed to vote today at 2:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on a key amendment to the $3.75 billion British loan bill. It's a vote on an amendment to require Great Britain to give the United States outright ownership of leased Atlantic bases. The outcome is a toss-up. A government food expert warned today that a nationwide railroad strike scheduled for May 18th would threaten the country's large cities with starvation in a very short time. Over in London, Britain's Labour government, accused by Winston Churchill of presiding at the destruction of the British Empire, won a vote of confidence, 327-158, from the House of Commons last night. there was a heated debate on a government proposal to withdraw ultimately all British forces from Egyptian territory. David Fleming, imprisoned Irish Republican leader, muttered feebly today that he expects to die within 3 days, but he again refused to break his hunger strike that has fanned Irish political tension. And General Joseph McNarney said in Berlin today that the Allied failure to achieve a common policy on the treatment of Germany as a political unit has permitted German leaders to make political capital by playing off one occupying power against another, which is just about the most dangerous thing that can happen there at this time. And while President Truman hopefully opens the Highway Safety Council today in Washington, we read of the development of the Snooper Scope, a device enabling motorists to drive at full speed in total darkness. Well, what do you think of that? And now I'll be back with more news in just a few moments.
There are millions of hands stretched out toward us here in the United States. They're asking, will you let us die? Famine is raging in Europe and Asia. Between now and July 1st, millions of children, women, and men, and in this order, face starvation. War has left chaos in its wake. In addition, a burning, spreading drought of worldwide dimensions has wrecked previous estimates of food requirements and has brought already famished people to the very brink of death. Unless foreign governments and UNRWA can buy a minimum of amounts of wheat, fats, and oils in the world market immediately to tide them over until the next harvest, famine, plague, and death will desolate half the world. Our share of the deficit of 9 million tons can be made up only if Americans voluntarily reduce their consumption of wheat products drastically between now and summer. Americans are being asked to sacrifice 40% of their consumption of wheat products and 20% of edible fats and oils, at least until July 1st. Every American should understand that every ounce of wheat and fats that we make available to our former allies is purchased, not given away. As a nation, we are now consuming more food than at any time in our history. And here's what you can do to help. Reduce consumption of all wheat and rice products and fats and oils. Eat more of the plentiful foods and eliminate all food wastes. Turn in all used fats. Keep Victory Gardens producing. And now back to Fraser Hunt.
I suppose we could call this the sad tale of the misunderstood dog. It is a terrible and distressing thing to be misunderstood. Even dogs, and I imagine all God's creatures, now and again suffer from it. The whole business of living is handicapped by big and little misunderstandings. Even nations suffer from it. And the real trouble with our poor old world this very day is that the great powers misunderstand one another. Russia, I am sure, misunderstands that we want only peace and decency and a happy world. And possibly, we've misunderstood Russia's inner motives and desires. And now comes this touching story of a dog that meant no harm, but was misunderstood. It was sent to me by Mrs. Lillian B. Blackmer of Rochester, New York. And I want to read this newspaper clipping just as it was printed. A bullet from the revolver of a deputy sheriff yesterday ended the attempt of a stray German shepherd dog to assume guardianship of 2.5-year-old John DeGroat, 3471 Brighton Henrietta Townwide Road. The dog showed up at the home of Abraham DeGroat Monday. Late yesterday, Mrs. DeGroat went into the yard to take the little boy into the house. As she reached for the child, the dog, which apparently had adopted the little boy, turned on her snarling. A sister of Mrs. DeGroat and her young nephew went to her aid, and while the dog's attention was distracted, the sister managed to pick up the child and whisk him into the house. The dog, according to Mrs. DeGroat, leaped at the screen door, nearly broke through, and finally tried to get in through a window. Deputy Sheriffs Richard Spur and Lewis Marks, who answered the telephone call for aid, found the animal guarding the house. They finally were forced to shoot him. The unfortunate animal was not identified, but the deputies believed he had at one time been guard to a child. Well, that is a sad and touching story. I feel awfully sorry for that poor, misguided, misunderstood dog. He was only trying his level best to do what he thought was right. And he scared the very ones he was trying to help. Why, that's just like human beings often do. This recent French election, when, despite all the prophecies and fears of the wiseacres, the French voters turned down the communist-backed new constitution, confirms an idea I've had for a long time. That idea is that about the easiest thing in the world to judge incorrectly is the French nation. On the face of it, France is an open book, Apparently, the French people were tired of the failure of their old republic and wanted to take a try at something really radical. So a considerable part of the voters a few months ago chose the French communists to take over. The communists formed a coalition with the moderate socialists to write a new constitution that, on the face of it, looked fairly red. Now, to casual and uninitiated observers, it seemed that Moscow now had the real road to France. The French communists, under the inspiration and leadership of Moscow, would soon present the world with a new revolutionary government with or without the bloodshed of a real revolution. That's the way it looked on the face of it. But things don't work out in France as it seems they ordinarily should work out. Because when all is said and done, Frenchmen are Frenchmen. And whether they are moss-back conservatives or red communists, it doesn't make much difference. To paraphrase an old saying, you can take the Frenchman out of France, but you can't take France out of the Frenchman. And that is something very important to know. Moscow, I imagine, felt that she had everything wrapped up well and good in France. France would go communist, and then the whole of Europe would sooner or later turn red. And now the French people have suddenly revolted from this specter of a communist France and a red Europe, and have turned down the new constitution that was to be the initial step in becoming a communist state. On June 2nd, they will start all over again, electing leaders whose first duty it will be to rewrite a constitution. It is probable that General de Gaulle, as coalition head of the conservatives and the moderate socialists, might return to power under the spell of a mad outburst of intense nationalism, with the tricolors flashing in the strong winds of La Belle France and the swinging, lilting, inspiring Marseillaise ringing down the corridors of time, past and future. For Frenchmen are just that, Frenchmen. And long may they live, for the world needs France and her sense of personal liberty and personal freedom. And that's something worth thinking about. You know, it was a fine day in Brooklyn this past Monday, but for Joe Chetesky, 10, and his sister Joan, 8, it was Blue Monday. The two of them went off very unwillingly to school. And when they got out at 3 p.m., the sun was shining beautifully, and more important, they were simply overcome with a feeling of restlessness, of wanderlust. By this time, they picked up their pal, Henry Summers, a 10-year-old Negro boy, and they went calling on the grandmother of the Chetesky children. And what do you think? Well, they found, that's the story, found $24 in the drawer of their grandmother's dresser. So the children took the money and left. Yes, all out of doors was calling to them, so they took a long ride way out to Coney Island, the wonderland full of adventure. The children stuffed themselves with frankfurters and popcorn and everything. And they had their pictures taken. And they bought wooden guns and sunglasses and went on all the breathtaking, thrilling rides. And then they changed the rest of the money into coins, and as they said, we had a swell time throwing most of it at people, and we felt like millionaires. They returned to Brooklyn and spent the night sleeping in a shanty, afraid of what waited them at home. They're home now, and I don't suppose they'll want to sit down for a few days. And now, thanks for the visit.
The smartest way to prevent adversity is to provide for it during prosperity. Regular purchases of United States savings bonds will soon grow to a substantial nest egg for your future security. Buy bonds and hold them. You've been listening to the friendly voice of Fraser Hunt, bringing you the latest news, his own expert comment on the puzzling issues of the day, and those touching human interest stories for which he is famous. Fraser Hunt, world traveler and world reporter, is heard every weekday, Monday through Friday, at this same time.
Fraser Hunt's commentary is transcribed earlier from Mutual for presentation at this time. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.